Good afternoon, Patriots. This is Praying Medic. It is Saturday, August 10th, and this is my latest QAnon update, and I'm going to bring you up to date on a bunch of other things, some related to Q, some are not related to Q. I'm going to talk about Jeffrey Epstein this morning and what is going on with 8chan, and is Q ever going to return? Getting a lot of questions from people. I've been doing a lot of research. Doing a lot of digging, doing a lot of threads on Twitter, trying to explain and kind of walk people through some of the stuff that's going on right now. Wanted to go back a little bit and cover something I have not covered yet on YouTube or on the podcast, and that is this this reported memo that came out by the FBI, supposedly from the Phoenix field office, claiming that the FBI has categorized conspiracy theorists as a new category of domestic terrorism. I did a ton of research on this subject, a lot of digging. The story was originally published by Yahoo News. It then went out to ABC, NBC, CBS, Wall Street Journal, New York Times. Everybody published a story based on the story that was published by Yahoo. Jenna Winter is the writer of the article. She also credited Michael Isikoff for coming up with the lead on the story. Isikoff, of course, was one of the first people who put out the Steele dossier. Anyway, I wanted to just bring people up to speed on what I found about that. I contacted Jenna Winter, and I was concerned about this bulletin from the FBI, supposedly from the FBI, because they linked it to a scribed account of a private individual. They did not link to an FBI vault site or any government site. They had this document. They said it was from the FBI. They provided no evidence to suggest that it was an actual true FBI document. And, you know, we know that the mainstream media has been doing everything they can to try to discredit Q and Q followers. So I was a little bit suspicious of the story. Contacted Jenna Winter through Twitter, asked her if she would give me a link to a government website or any evidence to corroborate her claim that this is a legitimate FBI document. She never responded to me. That was probably 10 days ago. So I did this thread. I tagged Jenna Winter. I tagged Isikoff. None of them have responded to this. They haven't messaged me. They haven't responded on a thread. And they haven't written any articles responding to my conclusions, which I'll share with you in just a few minutes. So this is a long thread. I'm not going to go through everything in here. There's a lot of videos in here, videos of people from the FBI, Department of Justice, and Homeland Security talking about how they identify and how they classify domestic terror threats. So the relevant things are, like I said, I did a lot of research. Jordan Sather kind of did a thread on this. That was actually what got me going. He looked at the document and saw some things that were a little bit sketchy. I also looked at it and saw some things that were sketchy. This is the scribed account where the document was posted. So, and one thing I would point out is that when organizations like the American Center for Law and Justice and Judicial Watch, they do investigative reporting. When they provide intelligence products or declassified government documents, they always provide details on FOIA requests or any other means that they use to obtain non-public documents. So one of the things that concerns me about this document is there is and was no corroboration other than, hey, this thing is hosted on somebody's private scribed account. So I went to the FOIA website, and when you are going to make a FOIA request, the government asks you to do a search of its database for previously released documents through FOIA. So I did a search, and I used the first seven words in the title of this intelligence bulletin. Anti-government, the title of it is Anti-Government Identity-Based and Fringe Political Conspiracy Theories Very Likely Motivate Some Domestic Extremists to Commit Criminal, Sometimes Violent Activity. I took the first seven words And I used those in the FOIA search and I came up with nothing. There was no result on the FOIA search. I tried some other search terms, things that were in the document. I came up with nothing. Didn't find anything. I've also sent a FOIA request and I have gotten nothing back yet on the FOIA request. And that was on August 2nd is when I sent out the FOIA request. All right. So, you would think that an FBI intelligence bulletin, if it had been obtained through FOIA, would probably show up in the database, but it didn't. But that doesn't mean it was not obtained through FOIA. It just means that I was not able to find it. I contacted the Phoenix FBI field office, and they referred me to their national press office in DC, or actually, I guess it's in probably Langley. Anyway, this is the letter, the email that I was sent from Kelsey Pietrantan, however you say his name, who was from the FBI. He said that they can neither confirm nor deny the legitimacy of that bulletin, but he did send me links to four different things. Three of these links are to video testimony. The first one is FBI Director Chris Wray's Senate Judiciary Oversight testimony on July 23rd, so it was not that long ago. And I found that to be very interesting. There is also a Counterterrorism Division House Oversight meeting with Mike McGarity. He attended it. He is Division Assistant Director of Counterterrorism. And then there was a third video, McGarity and a guy from DOJ, who's National Security Division Deputy Attorney General. We'll get his name in a minute. And then another guy from Homeland Security. They all testified at this Homeland Security hearing. Then there was a fourth link that he sent me, which was to an F official FBI website statement on the rise of domestic terrorism and how they categorize and classify domestic and foreign terrorism. So the FBI, National Press Office, again, they said they do sometimes put out bulletins and notices for their law enforcement partners, but they could not confirm or deny the authenticity of this bulletin. So I did some digging. And the first video was just kind of general interest. Chris Wray was talking about the way that the FBI has changed since he came in as the director of the FBI. In the second video that I posted, Wray responded to a question by Dick Durbin, who is expressing his concern about white supremacist violence. And I can probably get the volume turned up here. It might be helpful to listen to this.
You talk about homegrown violent extremists, and I talk about domestic violent extremists. Are we talking about the same thing?
No. So we use the term homegrown violent extremism to refer to people already here in the United States who are inspired by different parts of the global jihadist movement to commit terrorist acts.
Okay,
We
I
use the
get that.
term domestic terrorism to refer to a broader array of threats ranging from anarchist extremism to different kinds of racially motivated violent extremism to different kinds of environmental extremism.
All right, so in that discussion, Chris Wray described three of the four categories that the FBI now uses to categorize domestic violent extremism. They only have four. They categorize all racially motivated violent extremism together, whether it's, and in this thread, I go into a legitimate FBI bulletin that came out that identified black identity violence extremism. This is a couple of years ago, based on four shootings of law enforcement officers. Whether it's white supremacist, whatever, anti-Semitic, it doesn't matter. If it's racially motivated, all of those are lumped into one category, racially motivated violent extremism. The second category they use is they have an abortion violent extremism, believe it or not. They have an environmental violent extremism, and they have a, anti-government and violent extremism. And those are the only four categories that the FBI has to categorize domestic violent extremism. They do not, and through all these videos that I posted, they do not identify what this one bulletin claims, which is anti-government, identity-based, fringe political conspiracy extremism. They have an anti-government, I think it's anarchist violent extremism, but they do not identify a anti-government, identity-based, fringe political conspiracy theory extremism. Not officially, not on their website, and I'll show you that in just a second. So I went through a lot of these videos, and Ray talks about, this is a good example of something that Ray said here. New philosophy by the FBI.
The Coast Guard lieutenant who was planning an attack on elected officials and TV anchors here in this area. We've had militia members.
Was that motivated by a white supremacy belief?
I think it would be a version of that, certainly. Our focus, when you ask about the categorization, our focus is on the violence. We, the FBI, don't investigate ideology, no matter how repugnant. We investigate violence. And I
heard this repeatedly over and over and over again from Chris Ray and from the people from the Department of Justice and Homeland Security. They all said the same thing. They do not investigate violence. I'm sorry, they don't investigate ideology. DOJ guy said they don't prosecute ideology. They prosecute violence. And the FBI and Department of Justice really aren't into identifying specific types of ideologies. This is again talking about black identity extremism. Cory Booker had some questions for Chris Ray. Ray informed him, look, we don't use black identity extremism anymore. We categorize all of that into racially motivated violent extremism. So this was a document that I found on the FBI Vault website. I said it was a bulletin that they put out 2 years ago, 2017, based on four shootings on law enforcement that they felt was motivated by black identity extremists, right? So the interesting thing about this document is it bears a lot of similarity to the document that Yahoo has reported on. In fact, it has some markings on it that are really difficult to explain where they would have come from. So let's see if I can get down to DOJ. This is a fellow by the name of Wegman who was being asked about how does the DOJ prosecute violent crimes and how do they protect civil liberties? And he talked about, the DOJ is up against a lot of restrictions because they have to guarantee the First Amendment right of people to speak, to assemble, and to have their own ideologies. And DOJ does not interfere in that. So that was a question that came out. This gentleman, Representative McCall, asked a good question. Former prosecutor said, there are no criminal domestic terrorism charges currently that the DOJ can apply to a terrorist act. And actually, there's a lot of discussion now in light of these shootings last weekend, where people want to create domestic terrorism legislation. The DOJ guy explained, I think, very interestingly.
This hearing, and I'm just curious what your thoughts would be on Congress enacting a domestic terrorism charge. What would be the benefits or risks of doing that? If I could just go down the panel.
Yeah, I can take that. So we're always looking to improve our authorities. And so I think we're certainly open to having a discussion with the Congress. If there's interest in the Congress in pursuing a domestic terrorism statute, we're certainly open to having that discussion. I think you have to think about exactly what issue you're trying to fix. As I've talked about in my opening testimony, we do have a number of statutes that we use in these domestic terrorism cases. So the question is, what gap would it fill exactly? We probably would not want, the one thing I would say, something that's similar to what we have on the international side, which is designating foreign terrorist organizations. We're not going to want to, for good policy reasons that I think the committee on both sides of the aisle would share, designating domestic groups as domestic terrorist organizations and picking out particular groups that you say you disagree with their views and so forth is going to be highly problematic in a way that's not when you're designating Al-Qaeda or ISIS or an international terrorist organization. So
Brad Weigman here pointed out that the difficulty with creating national domestic terrorism laws is that you have to identify certain groups, certain ideologies that would be singled out, identified as terrorist groups, and then they would be prosecuted. Well, no one is going to want their pet organization to be identified as a domestic terror organization, which is why Antifa has not been classified as a domestic terror organization, because there aren't any domestic terrorism laws in the same way that there are foreign terrorism laws. The government can designate Al-Qaeda or ISIS or other organizations as foreign terrorist organizations. They can then apply economic sanctions. They can prosecute them. They use certain tools in the Justice Department that are not available for domestic terrorism because they categorize them differently and they have different tools available. All right, so there's a lot of interesting discussion. I'm just going to see if I can find something that on this thread. No, I'm going to go to the next thread. They broke my thread in half. All right, so continuing along with this bulletin, I did a deep dive into the FBI intelligence bulletin, and I'm not going to state conclusively what I think about this FBI bulletin that they published. However, I will say this, it's just very strange. First of all, there's the fact that the bulletin was not hosted on a government website. It was hosted on someone's private Scribd account. The other thing is that, let's look at this. In declassified documents, and this is an example, if you look at this one, this was a document that Q linked to, this declassified NSA document. What I notice, and you can't see in that picture because I've got it, but wherever there is a for your eyes only or a restriction to the public, they strike those out. They put strike throughs on them, and you know, maybe I can bring this down so you can see it. Yeah, you can see it there, I think. Secret related to USA, Five Eyes, right? Strike through. For your eyes only, strike through. Anywhere in a document where there are restrictions, if it is a legitimate government document, they usually do strike throughs on whatever classifying indicators are on the document. That is a good way to know that you're looking at a legitimate government document. The document that was provided by Yahoo has no strikethroughs on it. Now, this is an FBI intelligence assessment. It was published in 2017 on Black Identity Extremists. You'll notice it was law enforcement sensitive because it was published for their law enforcement partners. But all of the notices of restriction for official use only, law enforcement sensitive, strikethroughs on everything, on every page in this document. Wherever there's a restriction, there's a strike through. So that someone looking at it knows this has been released for public information. All right. Again, here's another page in that same document. You can see strike through, law enforcement sensitive, for your official use only, always strike throughs. let's see, and I go down here. All right, some of the things that I found very interesting. And I'm not going to belabor this point too much. On the FBI bulletin about Black Identity Extremism, I found something interesting. At the bottom of the document, there was a customer service satisfaction survey, right? And this is it. And what I've noticed is that The boxes to check the make your selection overlap the words by one or two letters. This is integrate, this is incorporate, and you can see the other words below. The second line down on the left is share contents. That's below that is share with my organization. Below that is improve a situational awareness. And there's a letter or two that are obscured by the selection boxes on all of these selections, right? You can see on both columns, they're obscured, partially obscured. Why is it relevant? Well, here's another thing I noticed. If you take, this is again from the Black Identity Extremism Bulletin. You take a vertical line and strike it all the way through the document and put it through the center of the number one, the number two, and number three sections on the customer satisfaction survey. You find out that number four, five, and six are not on this plumb line. They are to the left of the plumb line, and they're actually off the page, the numbers are. So this document, when it was scanned, I'm guessing, got somewhat, there was some scanner artifact that caused these numbers to section to be moved over and caused these boxes to be, to overlap these words, okay? Again, I'm just analyzing this, that it looks like when they scanned this document, there were some irregularities. There's no way this document would have been made with these boxes overlapping half of these words. It just doesn't make any sense. Interesting also on this Black Identity Extremism document, at the bottom, Rev.28August2013, product serial number is 17, that's the year 000530. A serial number is a unique identifier for a document so that you can look it up in the system. All right, if you look at the intelligence bulletin that was provided by Yahoo, one of the things I noticed is that where it says law enforcement sensitive for official use only, none of those have strike-throughs on them, not any of them. And that is problematic. If this document was originally designed for law enforcement to viewing it, and they did not clear this for official public viewing, that's a problem. And again, it doesn't prove anything that these don't have strike-throughs, but it's concerning because normally when an agency clears something for public dissemination, they strike through all the restrictions. So let's see. I'm gonna get down to something that I think. All right, so this is the customer satisfaction survey on the bottom of the document that Yahoo put up. And strangely enough, remember that overlap of the boxes where you check your selection overlapping the first couple of words on each line? Exactly the same. And I mean exactly the same. Integrate into my own organization, share contents, share within my organization, improve situational awareness. That little checkbox is covering up the same exact letters in the same way on all these words right here. I found that highly interesting. Let's see, also interesting is the title of this document that was provided by Yahoo. The title actually runs completely off the edge of the page. I don't even know where it went. That doesn't continue down on the second line. But if you look here, anti-government identity-based and fringe political conspiracy theories very likely just runs off the edge of the page. I found that interesting. Again, like I said, you can notice that the overlap of the boxes and the words is exactly the way it is on that black and white document from the Black Identity Extremism. And lo and behold, if you strike a line through this document, top to bottom, let me go back here. 1, 2, 3, right in the line, four, section four, section five, and section six all fall left of the line and are off the page almost exactly as they appear on the previous document. Huh, what are the odds of that? There it is, all right? Lines up exactly the same, even though it's color, which, is interesting. And then by the way, there is a color version of the Black Identity Extremist document out floating around out there if you're interested. I did a lot of research on this, like I said. Okay, the Black Identity Extremism document has a watermark, Intelligence Assessment FY17. I'd identify the template that this document was made from. The one posted by Yahoo has FY19 intelligence bulletin, so built off of a different template. Interestingly enough, Rev 28, August 2013, right, which identifies that this is the Black Identity Extremist. It's the same exact one on the bottom of the one from the Yahoo. And the serial number from the Black Identity Extremist document, right there, but the serial number on Yahoo's document is redacted. There's only three places there's redactions on this document, and the serial number for the document is one of the things that's redacted. So I put all this together, and I think, you know, this just doesn't look good to me. I cannot conclusively prove that this document is a forgery, but it has some problems. I'm just going to put this out here before I go. If you go to the FBI News, where they've got different documents on the FBI website, this particular page describes how the FBI classifies domestic terrorism threats. They have four categories. I listened to all these videos over and over and over again. FBI, Department of Justice, Homeland Security, all use the same four categories, all said they don't investigate or prosecute ideology. They identify racially motivated violent extremism, anti-government, anti-authority extremism, animal rights, environmental extremism, and abortion extremism. Those are the only four categories they have for domestic violent extremism. They do not identify political conspiracy, fringe political conspiracy extremism. That is not one of their categories. So the fact that this document creates a new category that the FBI has not officially identified is another red flag for me. It just doesn't pass the sniff test. So anyway, that is my deep dive on that FBI document that Yahoo put out there. Moving along, a lot of people have been asking if Q's absence and the removal of 8chan from the internet is the 10 days of darkness that Q has referred to. I do not think that is the case. The reason I do not think that is the case is because the 10 days of darkness obviously was Q predicting something that was about to happen. And in the question and answer session from December of last year, one of the Anons asked Q, how do you know the future? Q said, control. Q is able to correctly predict some future events because Q and the president and their team, they control the timing of things like military operations and the release of executive orders. You can accurately predict the release of an executive order if you know the president and you know when he's going to release it, right? So they have control over certain things, which is how they can predict those events. But Q does not generally predict things which they don't have control of. All right. I think a more likely interpretation of the 10 days of darkness would be a period of time when Q was not going to post for 10 days, and Q knew there was going to be a 10-day period when he would not post, and he would have direct control over that. And actually, that period of 10 days happened between December 25th and January 4th. There were 10 days there where there weren't any posts. On the 10th day, Q came back on January 4th. If you count the last post on the 25th, 26th, 27th, 28th, just count forward, you get 10 days. Interesting, on December 25th, Q posted this post. This was the last post before going silent. 10, 10, 9. What follows 9? 8, 7, 6, 5, 4. I think it was a countdown. And I think Q was telling us the 10-day countdown was going to start on the 25th. And then 10 days later, Q came back on January 4th. I think that was actually the 10 days of darkness. And there may have been a second 10 days of darkness in December. If you go back and look at the post from December, you'll find some very interesting things. Anyway, not going to belabor that point. I will say this, moving over to the next one, let's just talk about this real quick. So people have been wondering what the heck is happening to 8chan and what's going on with Q not posting. So 8chan lost the support from several of the tech companies that were providing them support. Because of political pressure, because of economic pressure, 8chan lost the company that was hosting their domain name. They got it yanked. Cloudflare was providing protection from DDoS attacks. Cloudflare decided not to support them anymore. They got another company, and that company got deplatformed. So there's been this ongoing war trying to take out 8chan. I think mostly because Q is posting on 8chan. If Q is posting on 4chan, they'd be going after 4chan. But they're not, are they? There's not a lot of screaming and hollering to get 4chan deplatformed. It's all about taking down 8chan right now. So Jim Watkins, who is the owner of 8chan, he made a public statement. It's available on YouTube. I put it on my website at the end of my latest post, talking about the 10 days of darkness. And it's a good message. It's short. It's like 7 minutes. I would advise listening to it. Watkins has been asked to testify before Congress. He is probably here in the States already. Don't know when that testimony is going to be because Congress is in recess right now. So we don't know when Watkins is going to testify. 8chan is working on getting the 8chan website back online. I believe that when 8chan gets back online, Q will start posting again. They're working on it right now. Ron Codemonkey is one of the guys who's working on it. They are working on a system. I've been following Codemonkey. If you want to keep up on what is going on, you might want to follow Ron Codemonkey on Twitter. He is CodemonkeyZ, at CodemonkeyZ. BitMitigate was one of the companies that got deplatformed. They were going to provide the service that CrowdStrike was providing, and they got deplatformed. So Ron has been doing updates to keep everyone abreast on what's happening, what progress they're making. He has not posted since August 7th. He said, "We're using our downtime to scale 8chan servers, networking, and software to be stronger for when we come back online." So 8chan is going to come back online. I believe Q will start posting again. They need to figure out how to basically create a system that is not going to be subject to these attacks in the future. One thing to notice is people had been saying that 8chan was set up on ZeroNet, and Codemonkey wanted everyone to know they did not set up that network on ZeroNet. And he is I'm just going to advise people to stay away from it. Until we get official word from 8chan or from Codemonkey, I would not try to access 8chan on any platform. They're working on it. And like I said, I think when they get this all worked out, Q will be back, so nothing to freak out about. Okay. Now, let's do this. So Jeffrey Epstein was reported to be found dead this morning. And people are kind of a little bit concerned. What's going on? What happened? Is he really dead? Did they sneak him out? Suicide? Is it murder? I'm not going to speculate a whole lot. I will give you the information that I've got. One thing I think that's worth looking at is, Attorney General William Barr has launched two investigations. He is launching an investigation into the death of Epstein. He has also asked the Inspector General to look into Epstein's death to find out what happened, because he was supposed to be on suicide watch, right? So there are investigations going. Also, there's a statement this morning from the Southern District of New York, which is they're prosecuting the Epstein case. Their statement is basically that the investigation remains ongoing, and they're going to continue researching. Now, the last thing I want to talk about is, what does it mean that Epstein is no longer available to testify? Well, I would like to suggest that it doesn't mean really anything at all to the case, probably. And the reason I say that is, Q hasn't really posted a whole lot about Jeffrey Epstein. Q has been posting a lot about Rachel Chandler. Q began posting about Ray Chandler back in April 6th of 2018 was the first post, right? So we get a picture of this gal with Prince Andrew and Ghislaine Maxwell, and Guffrey is her legal name, last married name. Anyway, Q starts posting about them April 6th. Why did Q focus on Ray Chandler instead of Epstein? Well, for the same reason he focused on Allison Mack and not Keith Raniere. You won't find a whole lot of references about Keith Raniere in Q's post, but you're going to find a lot about Allison Mack. The day that Allison Mack was arrested, April 20th, Q said Mack is naming names. Big names, Hollywood, government, local, federal. Proof, Standard Hotel, helicopter crash, all related. Future will prove past. AS, Adam Schiff, feeling okay today? Right, so Q has been telling us that it's not the big names that we need to focus on. It's the little people, right? It wasn't Keith Raniere, it was Allison Mack. Because Allison Mack gave prosecutors the information they needed to bring charges against all these people, all right? Allison Mack is a small-scale version of what Ray Chandler is going to do. Q said Ray Chandler is Allison Mack times 100, right? Ray Chandler is the linchpin to this whole thing, not Epstein. I mean, it would be interesting to have Epstein testify, but they don't need Epstein's testimony. They have Ray Chandler. And Q suggested July 9th regarding BCRC Epstein plane pick, right? Bill Clinton, Ray Chandler, Epstein plane pick. Q had previously posted a picture with them. And Q asked, did the FBI DOJ interview Ray Chandler? When did public awareness grow across social media? Class 1 through 99. What age is Ray Chandler in the picture? Under the age of 18. 15. Who posted the picture? Ray Chandler. Q here clearly suggested that the FBI and Department of Justice have already interviewed Ray Chandler. They have her testimony. They've probably got all the data, emails, phone records, pictures, whatever forensic evidence they need. I'm sure they have it all. Q began to talk about Ray Chandler because they needed public awareness to be increased. Q's job was to get on 8chan and talk about what was going on with Ray Chandler and Epstein and the temple and all the high-level powerful people that are going to be taken down when this is eventually prosecuted. So people are concerned that because Epstein is out of the way now, the prosecution is done. They've got no witnesses. No, they've got all the witnesses they need. And I believe they've already gotten all the information they need from Ray Chandler. I don't know where Ray Chandler is. I have no idea. But I have, I'm reasonably confident. FBI and Department of Justice have all the information they need. Probably have her in a safe place. And like I said, Southern District of New York said the investigation is going to continue. People are going to be prosecuted. They just released all that information from the Epstein files. Was it yesterday or the day before? People are plowing through all that information, all the documents and the pictures and everything. And Bill Richardson, former governor of New Mexico, got fingered in those documents, along with some other people. So it's all unwinding. It's all coming out. Adam Classfield, I'm following him on Twitter. He has been following a lot of this courthouse stuff. He got a message from someone who's an attorney. It's an important note that after Epstein's death, no one else would have standing to challenge a search warrant on his house. Everything will be admissible against any other defendant without the possibility of a motion to suppress. So maybe prosecutors will actually have an easier time getting evidence admitted into this case now that Epstein can't, his attorneys can't object anything. So I think everything is okay. Q has continually reminded us nothing can stop what is coming. And the good guys have all the information they need. Alrighty, that is going to do it for this update. Love you all. Take care. Keep Q and the team in prayer. Keep the president in prayer. Keep Denise and I in prayer. Catch you on the next broadcast.